Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to A Better Peace, the War Room podcast. I'm Jacqueline Witt, professor of strategy at the U.S. Army War College and the editor for A Better Peace. We're glad you've joined us today. On today's episode, I have the privilege of talking with a colleague who has, over the last year, become a friend as she joined the U.S. Army War College faculty for the year. Dr. Jennifer Mittelstadt has been the Harold K. Johnson Chair in Military History this year, so academic year 18, which is a position that's occupied for 1 or 2 years by a visiting professor who is an eminent military historian. We're recording this just before graduation in 2018, so by the time the episode airs, Jennifer will have returned to her permanent home at Rutgers University, where she is an expert on American history, specializing in the 20th century history of the state. She is the author of the book, The Rise of the Military Welfare State, which was published in 2015, and she's been hanging out with us at the War College since last summer. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for her to get to talk about her year and her reflections on her tour of duty with the U.S. Army. So, Jennifer, thanks for joining us this year, and thanks for joining us today on the War Room podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I want to ask, what were your first impressions? What did you think when you showed up at Carlisle Barracks ready to start a sort of new adventure?
Well, I think maybe the best way to think about my first impression is title of the place itself, the War College. I think if you're coming from the outside, it surprises you that there's a place where you study both war and maybe sort of traditional academic things, and that you combine the cultures of the military and academia into one place.
When you told people that where you were coming or what you were doing, did they have any idea? Right, like most people don't know this place exists, right?
They don't. And actually, I knew it existed before the Harold K. Johnson Chair because I had been coming to the Army Heritage and Education Center to do research.
Right. So for military my book. Historians probably know.
That's right. So we know about it. Colleagues who are not military historians and who haven't had any brush with PME at all thought that I was going to work at West Point.
Right.
Right. And that I would be teaching cadets. And actually, even though I've explained it to them multiple times, I still think at some level they think that's where I am and what I'm doing. Because when they think of military and education, higher education together, they only think of the military academies, I think. And they don't know about the progression of education that goes along of officer education.
Sure.
And so that this institution remains unknown and mysterious. Yeah. Even after
there's
it's
actually
known.
A vast like complex of degree granting institutions at various levels, and I think that's something that's really interesting when we think about, because they're very well known within the military and within the officer corps, but maybe not from the outside. Any other sort of first impressions or things that struck you as being interesting or odd when you first came?
Well, as you know, I actually kept extensive notes the whole time I was doing this because of the fact that there were so many things that really were different. And trying to sort of just name one is quite difficult. But I will say maybe this would be the overarching one. So I started to kick myself for having chosen American history to study in graduate school when I started to see my friends who had decided to study, say, the history of France or of Japan, head off to
they have
interesting
better,
places to go do
research. Archival research.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going down to Washington, D.C. to the National Archives again. Exactly. College Park, Maryland.
I got to
Maryland.
Go to Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Well, but I have to say, since I wasn't trained as a military historian and my first two books had been on the history of what I would now maybe think of as civilian social policy, choosing to study the Army for that third book meant that I got to do a little bit of traveling of sorts into places I otherwise wouldn't be. And so spending, you know, 8 years researching the book and writing it, and then capping that off with coming here to the War College really meant for me access to a world I didn't know very much about as a civilian, and learning about military culture. So the things that really stood out to me were all of these new modes of dress, way of interaction, rituals, requirements that you just don't have in civilian life. And for civilians who don't have familiarity with the military are utterly new.
It's almost like ethnographic or anthropological, like field research, which historians don't always get to do. Because
exactly.
We're so focused on documents and archives.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting. I've been working for the Army or the government for 10 years, and there's still days when I go, what, like, where am I, and what have I walked into?
Yes, I mean, even just the mystery of getting on post, which I have to say wasn't fully explained to me, because if you're in the military, it seems self-evident, like how you would get on post and that you would, you know, you need a lot of forms to be able to first get your, just to get on as a visitor, and then you need other ones, right, to be permanent. The fact that you go through a security gate every day to get to work, these things are maybe taken for granted in the military world, but for civilians, they are unusual. Shocking to say, it surprised me to see so many people in uniform on my first day of work. Right. And I shouldn't have been shocked, but it was nevertheless a shock.
But it's a little bit, it's jarring if that's not the world that,
it
you're,
is.
That you're coming from.
It in. Is.
Great. So can you tell us a little bit about the position that you hold? Like I said, it's the Harold K. Johnson Chair in Military History. And maybe talk us through some of the purposes of that visiting professorship and why maybe you think it's important that civilians come from civilian academia into the War College for a year or maybe two. Some people stay for a couple years.
So the Johnson Chair was created to honor General Harold K. Johnson, and it's several decades old now. And so many military historians in the United States over the years have held the chair. The purpose of the chair, I think, is twofold, and has also changed, I think, a little bit over time. It was at first to sort of encourage research in military history and to have people come and utilize the resources that are here at the War College and at the Army Heritage and Education Center. But in a larger sense, it's an effort to bring civilians into the military in order to sort of chip away at the gap that exists, particularly since the beginning of the all-volunteer force, between the civilian world and the military. And that is, in fact, what I found most interesting about taking the position and holding the position. It was what was most alluring to me, was to have the opportunity to actually spend a year in an institution that I had studied, as you said, mostly through archives and documents. A few interviews here and there and guidance from people who were currently in the military, but not by sort of living in a military institution and experiencing that for a year.
Sure. So what are some of the ways that you feel like that gap might have been chipped away at or maybe bridged, or some of the ways that you maybe hope to continue to bridge that gap sort of going forward?
Well, I think one of the best experiences being here is just being in the classroom with your students and being able to have interactions that are both kind of intellectual and social that let me see who some of these military officers were, how they thought, what their experiences had been, how they might come to an intellectual question from a different vantage point than I did, how they might bring practical experience to what I think of as a purely kind of theoretical question, in a way,
question.
Yeah, that I would not. And I don't know, to sort of demystify, honestly, a little bit, military officers, right? I think that because of the separation between the military and civilians, part of what happens is a kind of mystification about what the day-to-day life is like for people in the military. On both sides, yeah.
And so I imagine the reciprocal is true too, or the obverse is true as well, which is your students benefit from having civilians in the classroom, from getting to talk to you, from meeting someone who's from, right, the sort of ivory tower, whatever that means, that transfer happens sort of in both directions.
I hope it does. I mean, I can't speak for them, right. So I don't know. I know it did for me, and I found it fascinating. I have indications that it did for them. I think that in a way they did see me as sort of an ambassador from the world of what in their minds constituted sort of like real research or real academic experience. So often they would come to me outside of class for a question about their year-long research project, which they call the SRP here, and sort of say, well, I really want to know, if I was thinking about publishing this, you know, what would be some of the high marks I would have to hit?
Right. That you're an expert in order to do this, in a different field.
Exactly, from expert in this. What really should I do with a conclusion to make it so that it looks like I've really moved knowledge to a new place? You
if
know,
you have a good answer to that. There are many of us who would like to know what to do with conclusions.
Conclusions are the great mystery, and not that I gave them the answer, but it was clear that they thought of me in that sense.
Sure.
And I felt like that was something where I had something concrete to offer them, because I wasn't going to be able to offer them expertise in the theory of war and strategy, which, after all, I had never taught before I'd come here, right?
Yeah.
And that is actually something worth talking about. That is one of the other great benefits of doing this. But to be able to offer them something of my experience in what it means to do research and how to write and how to communicate with audiences outside of your, you know, commanding officer, right, or your unit or whatever it is, how to be able to have those conversations. I think that might have been the valuable end of this exchange for them.
Sure. Yeah, we talk a lot about senior leaders needing to be able to communicate to broad public audiences, to write well-educated, interested people, but who aren't so deeply steeped in military acronyms or culture organization, that communication can be really important. So you mentioned that the theory of war and strategy, which is one of the core courses that we teach here at the War College. It's also a course that I teach and have taught. But it's different from what you teach at Rutgers, which is mostly American history and mostly, again, sort of history of the state, some probably gender history, labor history. So things that actually we don't teach a lot of here. So you were thrown into this brand new course. Can you tell me a little bit about how you experienced the curriculum here and teaching that for the first time?
Yes. Well, I have to say that I think that every academic should stop at some point in their career and learn something entirely new. And I don't necessarily mean for the research purposes, because I think what academics tell ourselves is that, well, I'm working on a new research project, and so I'm learning new things.
Right. And I'm going to make a new class, but it's sort of in an allied field.
It's almost always actually building off of a set of questions or methodology that you know really well. Well, this was not true of the theory of war and strategy. There was neither the historical background nor the methodology in strategic studies that I could sort of draw on. So instead, it was this fabulous experience of going back to school. So the sort of training for the course that goes on, which is like this intellectual boot camp that takes place before you actually teach, and it's 2 weeks long, was tremendous fun for me. And I know it's probably not for the faculty that has to sort of go in there and you're thinking of like retooling to teach the course that you've taught again. But if you're coming in from the outside, basically what you get is a mini course in the theory of war and strategy. It's a seminar. Yeah. And actually, you know, I was thinking back to that time just the other day and thinking about how we had a particularly good engaged group of people, I think, in my seminar prep group who were enthusiasts and wanted to ask a lot of questions. And we absolutely turned it from what could have been a kind of here's the information, consume it, get ready to teach it, into a lively question and answer seminar. And so it was totally exciting and stimulating. And I'd never read the history of the Peloponnesian War before. And reading Thucydides with smart people and like a great instructor was fantastic.
I think it's a lot of fun. So we were in the same group, and I have taught this before and had much the same or much of the material before and had much the same experience, which is that this is really intellectually stimulating and engaging to learn new material. And for us as historians, not only new historical material like Thucydides, but also new disciplines and new fields, right? Where the course includes political science and strategic studies and international relations. So it can feel at once overwhelming and but really exciting, and I think it can give us a good sense of how our students approach it too, which is that a lot of this is new or put together in new ways.
Yeah, and I think everybody should do something completely different at some point in their life. Yeah, so this was like intellectually completely different and good really, really advice. Fun.
So you mentioned Thucydides. Are there any other sort of standouts in terms of things you encountered for the first time this year?
Yeah, I think so I found the Thucydides fascinating, but of course I'd never read Clausewitz either. And I guess just understanding how much that text is a touchstone. I mean, it's almost like biblical in nature and function in this
sacred
particular
in
field.
Ways.
Yeah, a sacred text that can be read and reread and reinterpreted very different ways. I actually thought it was far more open to interpretation than we even allowed in the course of the class. So that was absolutely a highlight for me. I think also some of the material that we did on sort of why wars start and how wars end, I found very profound and actually something that I had not given a great deal of thought to, even as a historian who believes that what she does when she teaches these in her survey, right, is sort of lay out the long-term causes for something, then think about the proximate causes and what gets us in. But maybe especially thinking more complexly about the way wars end, it's often we don't even talk about them ending. We just say they're done now and we're on to the next topic.
Right. Or we talk about the treaty. I always use the U.S. survey as an example, which in a lot of places either will end with the Civil War and then the second half will pick up sometimes after Reconstruction.
Right.
Like you'll miss entire pieces or some will end before the war and skip the war entirely and then pick up with Reconstruction in the second half. And so that's, I think, an interesting question about how we teach history, even at an undergraduate level, to civilians and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that part really, really engaging.
Great. So speaking of those undergrads that you teach, or your graduate students as well at Rutgers, what was it like to teach colonels and senior military officers and senior civilians rather than your sort of traditional undergraduate or graduate student?
Well, I think the most obvious difference is that I have never been in such a male classroom before. Mm-hmm. And thinking about the overwhelmingly male nature of the student body here and also of the faculty was one of the things that made the teaching experience here very, very different. For the record, coming in just as a one-year person, it didn't make it difficult in any sense. Mm-hmm. So I did feel very comfortable in my classroom. But I've been teaching for many years, and I'm very comfortable as an instructor in front of all kinds of audiences. And so that may have played a role in alleviating what I could imagine for other people would be surprising and perhaps, sure. you know, sort of off-putting demographic.
Because the balance is definitely different. So I think like 60% of undergraduate degrees in the U.S. right now are awarded to women. And the percentage here at the War College is much, much, much smaller than that.
Much smaller than that. Maybe by a degree of, you know, close to, not 10, but.
Not quite 10.
Yeah. but near there. So that is very different. I think the other way that it was obviously different, at least in teaching the theory and war of strategy, was that I was teaching outside of my area of expertise, which isn't something that we generally do as academics, right? So I felt much more comfortable when I taught my elective in the spring because it was my area
of you're back in your home turf.
Exactly, my area of expertise. So that was something that was different too in teaching outside of that area, though, as I said, totally stimulating and really exciting to do so. In many ways, though, frankly, there's a lot that wasn't different.
Sure. So tell me about some of that. What was the same?
Well, I mean, I think that teaching is teaching in many ways. And what I mean by that is if your goal is to facilitate a deep and critical understanding of material, the way to go about achieving that is going to be quite parallel, maybe not exactly the same, but at least parallel, no matter kind of the age or audience, whether they're 18-year-olds or whether they're 45-year-olds, whether or not they do have advanced degrees like our master's students at Rutgers who are now there for their PhDs, or whether they're students who are getting their master's or they're getting their BA, right? I think that the kind of approach to critical thinking, to asking critical questions, to how you create a dynamic classroom environment, I think those things are actually very much the same. And I have to say that I didn't adjust very much my teaching approach that I would use in any small seminar at Rutgers. So, of course, I didn't teach in the way I would teach a large survey course with a bunch of lectures. But I often teach rather small classes at Rutgers, whether they're upper level honors and undergraduate courses or graduate courses. I teach those small classes, and the same kind of principles obtained here in the classroom at the War College.
No, I think that's a really interesting observation and important maybe to keep in mind as we think about who the faculty members are at the War College, and we think about who our students are and what our students bring to the table and what our faculty bring to the table, that in any sort of intellectual journey, answering questions about why is what we're studying important? Why does this matter? Why do I need to know this? How do I know what I know? How do I read text carefully and closely? Like those are things that are going to cross, like you said, age and gender and experience and yeah. profession and all sorts of things. So one last question, as you look at your sort of last week here, what do you think you will miss the most and what do you think you will miss the least when you leave the War College?
Okay, so what I will miss the least absolutely are the hoops you have to jump through just to have access to your computer, for example. So I work at Rutgers, which is a big state bureaucracy, and I thought that I had like a pretty deep inoculation to the terrors of bureaucracy, yeah, and technical difficulties and things like that. And I will say that's a barrier here sometimes to performing your job. I had never taken so much training in my life, and then only to have taken the training, find that nobody knew that I'd taken the training. And yeah. So, you know, you'd have access to the computer or not access.
So this is like an ongoing saga for...
It is. And it puts like all of those stories that my students like to read from like the World War II and Cold War Army, like about snafus and Mickey Mouse stuff and how everything is always kind of going right but going wrong at the same time. Right. It puts it in context. And
oh, I know that. I have an anecdote of my own now.
Right. So there's
that.
I will not
miss the IT.
Right. No, I think I will miss being around people who have very, very different perspectives from mine. So just as military culture has its own sort of it's a subculture, right? Academia is a subculture too. And that subculture has coded languages and habits of mind and ways of relating that mostly I like. I've obviously spent my career in doing that. But that does, you know, sort of produce the kind, a kind of sort of similar modes of behavior and interaction that are unchanging. Yeah, over many, many years. And I think I'll miss the opportunity to kind of cross the border between those worlds as often as I've been able to this year.
Great. Yeah. So again, I want to thank you, like I said, for joining us for the whole year, but thanks especially for joining me today on the War Room. And so, like I said, when this airs, you'll be back to your normal life. But we're very happy to have had you here. And this is Jacqueline Witt, and I'm signing off from the War Room.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.